I've been comforting myself all weekend that it'd be okay because nobody had come, so thank you for coming. I'm going to take you on a journey from here. I'm going to take you to a journey from there to here. And when we get here, I'm going to take you one more step, and I'm going to try not to fall off the edge. That's been the sort of catchphrase of my ministry, really. I wanted to start here and tell you something of my reflections about the Bread Church and what I've learnt from it and what I take with me. We're going to call in here briefly to look at how we survive and what are the strategies for survival that we can access as people that are alive. And we're going over here to Bradford, which is now my home, where I work. I'm a Methodist minister in Bradford. I work at a project called Touchstone. And then we're going to take another step. So I want to reflect on my personal journey from here to there, but I also want us all to begin to reflect on the processes of transformation that move us from one place to another, and how we can find within those processes that way of being, our vocation within God, that not only can transform us, but our skills and insights and means of transformation for the places in which we live and for the world that we love. That's all. We start over here in Liverpool, where I was for 10 years what people came to know as the bread vicar. And I had to believe that wasn't because of my shape, although I am mostly made out of bread. During that time in Liverpool, I worked alongside a group of people who came and gathered around bowls of bread, flour, yeast, dough, in order to make bread, to share community, and to give that bread away. And those of you who have read some about that story will know that that journey for me began in walking the place. I had no church or congregation, and you might say that's an ideal, perfect job. No roof to mend, because I didn't have a roof. And in that appointment, I began by walking the streets of Liverpool, listening to who was around, engaging with what was about in the place. And there was no option but to begin in the place and to let the place speak and to hear what the agendas were and are on the street. Now, I think that year of walking was probably the hardest of my ministry, because there was nowhere to retreat to. And I counsel you sometimes in your churches, just go walk about. Because if you can begin to see and to read and to hear what's going on in a city, you will understand that mission is about engaging with that. And it's not a church agenda, it's a life agenda. It's about how we can claim life in all its fullness and hear where that... Oh, I'm getting some sort of beat here. This is good. It's exciting. So that sense of being able to walk, to be able to listen, to be able to read a city, informed what happened in the Bread Church. And I think we are too often inside Christians. We go to church and we talk about church as though we're talking about God. And And God is out on the streets, amongst the people, amongst the buildings, in the place. That's the theology of mission that I believe informs whatever happens next. What happened in Liverpool was that we began to gather people around the making and breaking and sharing of breads. People now say, bread church, as though it's the most common thing in the world. Oh, yeah, bread church. But at the time, as we explored what making bread together meant, we were actually feeling our way into a whole new way of being. My beat is getting loud, isn't it? It's background music. So the theology of mission that was on the street, that we were able to listen to people, we were able to listen to the city, and we were able to gather around a table and bake and break bread together, informed much of my understanding of what it means to be church. That church is not something we do, it's something that happens when we're busy being alive in the presence of God. And that discovery, that sense that church comes to us, in some ways takes a lot of the stress out of our church agendas, it could do. Because we're very anxious at the moment about saving the church, about rescuing the church, about getting numbers up in churches, about finding a sort of mission that is going to enable people to opt into the institution. And in actual fact, I believe when we live our faith, church happens. And we actually need the faith to be able to engage in that process, in that walking and listening process. What is that? It's really good. I want to just call here a minute because one of the things that we heard, one of the things that came to me was this sense that many people are struggling to survive. And maybe we think about survival in terms of a world agenda, when people are hungry, when people are not able to gain political power. But in our society too, there are many people who struggle to survive. I've moved from the poorest city in England now to the second poorest in Bradford. And poverty is not just about not having money. It's about what you think life is going to offer to you. But more than that, there are people for whom their experiences of childhood, their experiences of family life, their experiences of early on in life have been abusive. And from those experiences of abuse, many have had to find strategies of surviving and how they survive. And in every group of people that we're in every group, there will be survivors. And so if I look out at you, I know that statistically, 1 in 8 people in Britain are survivors of some sort of abuse. So there will be survivors in this room, and you will know that journey about surviving and how it's a way of having to claim life in times when things are traumatic, or you have flashbacks, or things don't make sense. And that listening to survivors and how people learn to survive, I believe, gives us a new lens in which to through which to understand mission, and I want to come back to that. So if I walk over here, 2 years ago now, moved to Bradford. I left the bread church behind. There is another minister there now. It's a great place, the bread church. It's called Somewhere Else. It's above the bookshop News from Nowhere, and the new minister is called Ian Who. It confuses the postman. Methodist church, somewhere else. So I've moved on from that, and the Bread Church continues to flourish, and it's under new leadership, and I hear reports from time to time. I've heard some reports being at Greenbelt, how things are changing and developing, and that's good news. And I'm now in the city centre of Bradford. Bradford is England's first majority Muslim city. I live and work in the middle of town, with Chris Howson, who's you may have heard Chris speaking, and some of Chris's congregation are here. Would you be a congregation? Followers. And in Bradford, we are working in a new understanding of what does it mean to be a Christian in a predominantly Islamic society. And those are some of the challenges that we're working with. And I'm on this massive learning curve, which is like a cliff face, really, in order to try and learn those new ways of understanding. What does it mean for us? What is mission when we are in the minority as Christians? And how do we work with that? And how are we authentic to our own faith when surrounded by people of other faith? And in Liverpool, the faith conversation was about football. In Bradford, the faith conversation is about faith. And that's challenging stuff. And so the question that I have been traveling with is, what do I take with me from Liverpool to Bradford? What do I put in my rucksack, if you like? And what do I leave behind? What is it that is of this place that I take with me, and what is it that is of this place that belongs here? And you will understand that 10 years of working with the bread makers, with the bakers in Liverpool, imprints on your heart. And those people that have come to be part of that baking community are people that I love, as they say in Liverpool, in my bones. So there is this kind of bereavement process about leaving. What do we leave? And what do we take with us? But that's a question, I believe, that we all travel with. What do we take with us, and what do we leave behind? Now, as I was leaving Liverpool, tell leaving of Liverpool is the song, which I'm not going to sing. As I was leaving Liverpool, stories were beginning to emerge. You know how when you're leaving a place, people that haven't spoken to you for ages, they queue up to have one last word before you leave. And for me, that opened up this conversation, particularly with the LGBT community, the lesbian, gay, bi, transgender community, who had always been and are integral to the work and life of somewhere else. Talking about journeys of transformation. And I realized, I think we realized together, that these stories, their story and my story, had lots of similarities to them. There was a kind of a pattern about it. There was a sort of a journey that we could recognize from within each other's stories. And it went something like this. This is who I am. I'm Barbara Glasson. I'm the minister in Liverpool. But I'm not quite what people think I am. So who the heck am I? And so this is who I am. Barbara Glasson, the minister in Bradford. But it's more than that. And if you are able to listen to people that have experienced the coming out, be they LGBT or survivors, whatever, you will hear within their narrative a particular sort of a pattern. And it goes like this. I'm not who people think that I am. There's something going on that I don't understand, but is of the essence of me, and needs to be expressed. And that actually is really scary. So I'm going to not talk about it. I'm going to keep quiet about that. And I'm going to hope it goes away. I think that I could possibly... I am not what people think I am. It takes people to a sense of kind of meltdown, often a place of complete confusion. I'm not who people think I am. I don't know what I am, but whatever it is, I'm scared. And that sense of being in some great melting pot where you're trying to keep the lid on it, but you know that something different needs to be expressed. And then there's a point of, well, is it possible that I could be such and such? Might it be that I am gay, lesbian, transgendered? Could it be that I am an abuse survivor? What is it that's going on within me that is coming to the surface? And then hopefully a sense of, aha, so this is who I am. I am this person. Do you recognize that process? I'm not what people say I am. I don't know what the heck I am. I could possibly be this. I am this. This is who I am. Now, as these stories of coming out were being shared with me, and as I began to really attend to what was being said, I realized that this transformative process that is very much within the LGBT community is something that we need to hear if we are going to understand how the church could possibly be transformed. Not just the church, but the world, actually. We'll start with the church. That's a big enough challenge. And I began to make some connections within my head with the sort of other narratives that I've heard in the stories of Jesus, and actually in the whole of the Bible, and began to see that this journey is a journey to life. It's a journey to life. Now, for a moment, I want us to come to this middle point here. This is the melting pot place. It is quite scary because I could fall off the edge of the platform. This is a melting pot place. This is the place of I am not. I was that, I might be that, but this is the place of I am not. Now, many moons ago, I took a degree in agriculture, and I'm very interested in the natural world, and I think actually, that's probably why I've worked in city centres all my life. It's the ways of God. But it's very interesting that I would see church as being organic. It's something that grows. It's not a structure. People want it to be a structure, but it's not a structure. It's a living thing. It's something like bread or like a tree. It's something that bubbles up. And so in this melting pot place, this sense of anomie, of unknowing, I suddenly thought about a butterfly. Actually, what I actually thought about was a cocoon. Do you know when a caterpillar is turning into a butterfly? And it gets to the enormous caterpillar, it eats and it eats and it eats and it eats my cabbages. And it gets to the middle and it thinks, hang on, I've got to do something different now. And it wraps itself up, spins itself a nice coat, and it hangs itself up somewhere. And a few weeks later, out pops a butterfly. Now, when the caterpillar is all wrapped up in its lagged, you know, it's hanging around, if you were a big bird and you came to eat that cocoon and you took a great big munch of it, you wouldn't eat caterpillar or butterfly. You would have a beak full of juice. Lovely thought. Maybe you had your dinner. Because what happens for a caterpillar to turn into a butterfly is that it melts down completely into juice. Okay? So I want you to write this on something. I want you to get a magnet, and I want you, when you get home, I want you to stick it on your fridge. And it says, a butterfly is not a caterpillar with wings on. Okay? Say after me. It is not a caterpillar with wings on. It isn't. The only way you get from being a caterpillar to being a butterfly is through metamorphosis, through this being reduced to your DNA, to the absolute essence of who you are. That's the only way you can do it. There's no shortcut. You can't just stick a pair of wings on and pretend. And I realized that this coming out narrative from I am, I'm not, I might be, I could be, I am, is actually an account of metamorphosis. It's not just changing something. It's not just sticking wings onto a caterpillar. It's actually transforming something into something different. And that process is key to being human beings. It's key to the mission of the church. There's no shortcut, right? Often in mission, we want to think about what we can change. Let's change our church. Let's have a fresh expression of church. Let's have old church with donuts. Not that I'm against donuts, you understand? Or with ginger ice cream. But that's not what we're called to be. I believe most profoundly that changing the church, trying to change something, is actually takes all our energy. Change is energy sapping. We can't just tinker with it. We have to enter this process of transformation, and that process ultimately releases energy. It comes with a bounce. And that's why that narrative is called coming out. Not just, well, I might be a bit different, you know, on a Monday. It's life-changing. It's transformative. It gives energy. It releases something. So here I was, listening to these stories, the coming out narratives, and survivors will tell these stories differently, as lesbian and gay people will tell these stories very differently, profoundly differently. Survivors will tell these stories differently, but here are the hallmarks of transformation. They're here, we can hear them. They're around us, they're within us. And I then began to look at biblical text and think, well, if they're within us, if we're starting with this experience of transformation, where are we finding it in biblical text? Well, the obvious example of that is the Exodus narrative, okay? And we can see the people of Israel coming out of the of oppression, out of slavery, and getting to the promised land and gaining their territory. But in the middle here, they're really, really in meltdown. You know, they're in the wilderness, and wilderness is a place of meltdown. They're fed up with Moses. And they are having to be in a place where nothing is secure for them. This Exodus narrative, it's a coming out narrative. Moses has a coming out narrative. It gets better. So that's interesting. So what about women in the Bible? And you have to kind of rummage for women in the Bible. But this wonderful story of Ruth and Naomi, Old Testament still, Ruth and Naomi, they've been in a foreign land, and Naomi is going to return to her homeland because they're starving, and they're going to go back, and Ruth is the stranger. She's going to a strange land with Naomi, and she's saying the force of this relationship is something that's going to make me travel from here to there in your company. And do you know the important thing about that is that this is in the time of the judges, when basically the story of the book of Judges is that of gang rape, and there are tribes that are nicking each other's wives and murdering people, and it's awful. And here's the story of Ruth. Ruth and Naomi, they're going to go and be different, and they're going to live differently. I am not. I'm living, I'm moving, I'm going with Naomi to this strange land. I meet Boaz, and I'm going to glean in the fields. And you know what? At the end of that is the genealogy of Jesus. You know, into the New Testament, the genealogy to David, and then to Jesus. And so here, this very differently worked coming out narrative in the book of Ruth. Aha, aha, aha. So I thought, emboldened by this, I'm going for Paul. So let's think about it. He's Saul. He's a Jew. He knows who he is. He knows who he is. He's somebody that's holding fast to the tenets of his faith. It's quite clear. And he's wanting to get rid of these upstart Christians because they're just a nuisance and they're wrong. And then we have the Damascus Road, right? And here he is, wham. Jesus, God pulls the rug from under his feet. You can feel. And he can't see and he's scared. And the whole, there's this massive paradigm shift. Suddenly, he begins to see differently. And very significantly, he's given a new name. And that's often what happens in transformation, this giving of a new name. And he's given a new name, and then he is used by God to bring in a new understanding for the Gentiles and beyond. So that's interesting that Paul might have a coming out narrative. And then I think, well, what does that mean, actually? What is that about? Can we see that this metamorphosis is about our understanding of God's creativity within the world? We're made in God's imagination. God can imagine us into being, can imagine us from nothing. We're made out of nothing. And we're pulled by love, by God, into being the I am that God intends us to be. Can we imagine that God could just take us and the whole of the earth out of nothing and enable us to metamorphosize into a butterfly? Could we imagine that? That is actually the stuff of creation. Chaos. Out of chaos, we're made. Amazing. Incarnation. Here's the story of Jesus. Look what Jesus is saying. Who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Caesarea Philippi. Peter, who do you say that I am? Do you think that's who I am? Yeah, I am. I am the Messiah, the Son of the living God. The I am, the becoming, the creation, the incarnation, the journey from I am not to I am. And that journey is something within which we can all participate because we are all creatures of God. We are part of creation. Interesting. So what do I take from here to there, and what do I leave behind? Well, I got really annoyed with somebody who described me as being a prophet. And I do spend quite a lot of my time being cross, and it's not always healthy. But sometimes I am wise enough, occasionally I'm wise enough to try and work out why I am so cross. And in this particular instance, I knew eventually what that was about. And it's not that I'm a prophet, heaven forfend. Incidentally, there are only three women prophets in the Old Testament, and one of them has the great name of No Idea. So if I was going to be a prophet, I would be No Idea of somewhere else, then it would be great. But are you a prophet? No Idea. Anyway, that's an aside. In the New Testament, there's Anna, of course. Anna, who waits in the temple, waits and recognizes Jesus when she sees him and sees the bigger story. Aha! Now, I'm not a prophet, but I do know people that are. And actually, what I want to say is that I believe very profoundly that the community at somewhere else, in all its complexity and wonder, is a prophetic community. It's quirky, it's crazy, it's weird, but it's prophetic. I want to tell you a story because it's an aside in a way, but it just kind of exemplifies what somewhere else is. In the last weeks that I was there, there was a guy that came through the door carrying a piece of paper which said, hello, written on this piece of paper, hello, my name is so-and-so, I'm an asylum seeker, and I speak only French. So we went, oh, bonjour, comment ça va, le pain. you remember this? And so anyway, after a while, he was happily making bread, and there was a great crowd of people around the table and talking and chatting and making bread, and bread everywhere, and smell of bread. And when my administrator came through from the other room and she said, Barbara, so-and-so is not very well. So I said, oh, well, I'll just tell them to sit down for a bit, they'll be fine. So she said, ask my children, that's my kind of way of dealing with somebody not being very well. She said, no, Barbara, he's really not very well. So, okay, well, I'll come through in a minute. So she came up to me and she said, whispered in my ear, Barbara, he thinks he's Napoleon. I got on the train going home that day. I thought, God, you are a bugger. You send me the same day somebody who speaks only French and Napoleon. That's the sort of community somewhere else is. It's weird, it's wonderful, it's challenging, it's strange, it's extraordinary, and it's of the gospel. And it's prophetic. It's prophetic because of the stories that surface there amongst the bread makers. The stories that don't fit in into any neat sort of narrative, but emerge out of those conversations side by side around the table. That is prophetic. It's not a blueprint for what everybody can do in their church. Oh, we've got to do messy church and bread church and da-da-da church. Doesn't work like that. It's about that engagement and that listening. That's a prophetic community. And it's a prophetic community because it has the LGBT community within it, who are living those stories of transformation, sometimes hanging on to faith through terrible exclusion, pain, misunderstanding, and who still want to say that Jesus understands and is with them and part of their life story through all that pain and struggle. It's a prophetic community because it's with refugees and asylum seekers who have come from this place to that place and had not had a passport that says, this is who I am, this is where I belong. That's why it's prophetic. It's prophetic because those stories are within it, and those stories emerge from it, and they are a subversive text. They're not a text that you can hear shouted. They bubble up from underneath, those subversive texts. And that's a prophetic community because within it, there are survivors of abuses where life, every day is a challenge about who am I? What has happened to me? Often survivors have had experiences that are not remembered, they're pre-language, so they're held within your body rather than within your word base. And so they have to be found, they have to emerge from a very deep place, often with help and with understanding. Survivre means to live above the story. That's French again. Survivre, to live above, to come out from underneath it. Survivre, survivre, come out. Sur is underneath, come out from underneath it and to surface. They have prophetic stories of transformation that are fragile and tender and vulnerable and go round and round and are struggles, but they're about life. That's what it's about. And I realized that my great joy and privilege of being with the Somewhere Else community was that I could hear those stories. I was privy to them, really. And that this is what I take with me to new work in Bradford. And Touchstone, where I work now, we're trying to be what we're calling a listening community. How are we people who intentionally listen to what comes out of the chaos? And that's a massive challenge because when we actually give people attention, when we actually listen, we don't know what we're going to hear or what it's going to trigger within ourselves. And so that intention of listening is, I believe, missional, and it's challenging for us, especially when we're working in a multi-faith context. How do we listen with each other, alongside each other, and how do we enable what we hear to be the agent of transformation? I want you to ask that for your place, because actually, I believe the church needs to shut up quite a lot. Talking as somebody that's talked for three gospel now, that we need to shut up quite a lot and listen a lot more. How do we hear the prophetic voices? How do you hear those prophetic voices? How do you hear your own prophetic voice? It'll come from a very strange place. It'll come from a very scary place. It may be within your community, it may be within the green movement, it may be within the anarchist movement, it may be within the children that are around you, it may be anywhere. But we are called by God, I believe, profoundly to hear those prophetic voices. Now I just want to take you this step. Not that one yet. This one. We've just had riots in England, and we've had kids looting shops and running in the streets. And we in Bradford have just had the EDL come to town, and many cities have that sort of stirring going on around us. We live in communities that are very unsettled. And they're very unsettled for lots of reasons. I don't understand all of them, but they're political and they're economic and they're about who has power, who shares power, how people are heard, how people give voice to who they are. And I'm not surprised that we've had riots. I'm more surprised that we haven't had them before. Youngsters have taken out their violence on each other because that's the way that they've known to express it. And nobody's been outraged. We should be outraged that youngsters are killing youngsters. but we only get outraged when they're nicking widescreen TVs. And I want to say that within that, what's going on around us, there is the prophetic. I'm not condoning smashing windows, but I do understand that sometimes that's the only way you can get heard. And it's a spin-off of capitalism that that the disempowered want to do that. But there are prophetic voices around us, and we ignore them at our peril, because there is within that anger and within that struggle truth about what makes life. And so I want to... you'll notice that the shape of this is actually a question mark, and we're now on the end bit. The dot is down there somewhere. But I want to ask us this question. I want to ask you this question, because it's what I'm wrestling with. How do you, when you leave Greenbelt, either today or tomorrow, how do you, when you go home to your city or village, wherever it is you live, how do you engage with listening to those who are not being heard? How do you hear the subversive texts? How do you pay attention to them? Because I believe that that is the mission of the church. We are called to give the attention to people's struggle and to honour it and to be changed by it and to be transformed through it. Because our society needs this paradigm shift, and clues of transformation are around us. This is God's creative process. It can lead us somewhere wonderful, to the I am, but it might leave us in this great soup. And we need to be people who know that God's call is to be different. So there's your question mark, and now you can ask me questions.
Right, well, thank you very much, Barbara. So, have you got any questions?
Hi, Barbara. I've really enjoyed your talk. Where our church is, we're surrounded by lots of youngsters who have, for one reason or other, life hasn't dealt them a good deal. We have drugs problems, alcohol. I find it not easy to engage with those people, especially when our church perhaps is very middle class and quite different from what surrounds us in the parish. I'm just wondering if you could perhaps, from your experience, say how to reach out to those people.
I want to throw that back at you and say, what are you scared of?
I don't know. I don't think I'm scared to talk to them, but often perhaps where they've had a lot of alcohol, there's drugs dealers, dealt them drugs and everything else. It's they perhaps don't find it easy to talk to you in any meaningful way. So it's getting that breakthrough.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have to name our fear, don't we? And actually stop worrying about what we're going to say and start thinking about how we're going to listen. Mm. And opening up safe spaces for that to happen, it's massively difficult, but it is possible. Mm. But making a safe space for people to be heard, really heard, means that you're probably going to have to find a place that isn't your place. That is a place where there's trust, and that's the long process. Mm. But you have no option but to do it. You know, it's your calling to do it. It's our calling to do it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
A suggestion, street pastors. Street pastors are really reaching people because they're out on the streets at night and the young people just do engage.
Yeah, I wanted to come with a suggestion as well. There will be people within your church, like myself, who are perhaps more often down at the local pub chatting to people than being at meetings at the church. And I find it's something God's called me to do. And I listen to people. I'm part of a weekly music group at a pub. And people all know I'm a Christian, but I don't make a big do about it. And I just listen to people. But it's then tricky for me to know how to feed that back to the church. And I do have ways of doing that. But how are we as churches going to act on the information? Just look out for people who've got a gift at talking to people. And I've actually found there are non-Christians doing the roles we as Christians should be doing in places like local pubs, who are alongside those kids, mentoring them, keeping an eye out for them, people who've had dreadful life experiences themselves who understand. And you know, I'm trying to get some of these non-Christians along to Greenbelt. I mean, I don't know if he's going to turn up today, but it would be nice if he did. But it's like a triangular networking thing and passing information to the right people and looking out for the right people.
I think we need to think about not so much what we're going to do for them. You know, they're our problem. We need to address our problem. We have to begin to see us. There is no us and them. It's us. It's our society. These kids are, you know, part of us, who we are, and we're not. It's all, you know, where's the power? We're not going to fix this stuff. You know, it's about, let's have the conversation about the reality of this experience, how you feel, how they feel, what it's like to be in this place, and if you're. If you can open up a place that's safe enough, and I mean that, I mean you don't know what the outcome's going to be. You know, it's that equal engagement. Then God's within that situation, as within any situation. That's where transformation happens. But you won't control it, and it won't fool your church, and you might get your light bulbs bust. And that's, you know. But, you know, it's that seeing people, really seeing people, and getting over this idea of, what am I going to say to them? Oh, you know, how do I hear?
Okay, kind of, I need to follow on from that in completely the opposite direction, because I run an LGBT ecumenical group that's kind of attached to the small groups in the church I go to. Yeah. But I need to know kind of how we get the people in church to move beyond between, if they disapprove, just being silent, or if they approve, just smiling, and how kind of, in your experience, do you actually engage with the normal people, in inverted commas?
Normality, do I understand this concept? I think it's interesting in this whole business of we have church and then we have a group within church, and this is the real church, and then we have that group which could join the real church if they behave the right way, you know. And actually we find that church shifts. Church isn't where we think it is often. I don't have the answers to this stuff, except to say you need to keep walking through the door, you know. And making spaces of listening and embodying places of listening, so that people are able to actually express real fears, and then see you as the people that you are, and not in categories. And this is a long, hard slog for us, isn't it? But it's crucial. It's not the add-on when we've got church sorted. Oh, now we have the LGBT community in because we can do all the rest. No, it's not the add-on. We spend a lot of time being anxious about who we're going to bless, but we don't value the people that are the blessing around us. And that's the place, that's the forum, isn't it? We happen to do it around bread. and we happen to do it about with an intentional community in Bradford. Your role is your place, if you see what I mean. But it's prophetic stuff. So I want to affirm it and say, keep going with that. Keep opening the door. Keep putting your foot in the door.
Yep. Hello. Fascinated by all that. Having walked the walk that you mentioned fairly recently, what I'd say to the lady there is, let them in. Let them into the main body of the church. Let them into the mainstream coffee areas, and let us tell our story. And then we're completely unthreatening. We don't threaten anybody. And it's fear. It's fear more than anything else that makes people believe that we're going to subvert things. Yeah, we do a little bit. But we don't threaten anybody. We don't mean to harm your children or anything else. And that's what I would say. Let us in. Let us tell our story. And I had no idea I was in such august company when I was making my way as well. Thank you very much.
I work in a prison, and we get to hear a lot of people's stories, and we tend to see them at the messy bit in the middle when they're in meltdown. But it feels really hard because we have them for a very short time, and there isn't an opportunity to build community in any very significant way or to see the whole process. And it feels very hard then letting them go out into a world where, for the vast majority of people, there is no church that is accessible to them, or no place where they could belong to a Christian community to finish off the process. And I suppose for me that just feels like a huge frustration that there's, you know, you just get this little bit, but there's nobody to take them on.
Yes. Yeah, it's maddening. And you see this little window, and you're with people, you know, to your utmost in that little window, aren't you? Mm-hmm. I remember at somewhere else, one Lent, it was Maundy Thursday, and we were doing some storytelling, some of the homeless guys had come really early because it was chucking it down with rain, and they came early, and we sat, and I said, right, okay, I'm going to read you a story, and I have a collection of children's books. And I said, right, I'm going to read you this story. It was about pigs and sheep that got a typewriter, and they typed a message to a farmer, and, you know, and they had the refrain, clickety-clack moo, and then clickety-clack bar. You know, it was a sort of story you'd read to a three-year-old, really. And we all joined in, and it was fun. We were filling in time, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, that was brilliant, I never had a story read to me before. And that sort of window, you know, is transformative. He's still talking about it, but we can all do it. I think the thing to say is, you know, come on, churches, for goodness sake, you know, there's prisoners in our communities. How are we going to engage with this? How are we going to open up our premises, our hearts? How are we going to do that? There are strategies that are, you know, that we've got churches in every community. So what are we messing about at? You know, come on. Because of this, we need to hear these stories. And prisoners are not people with two heads. They're people that have, you know, in some way come to grief within that stuff. And we can, little old ladies, you know, can read stories, can, you know, can make space, can make tea, can listen. We can all do that, actually. So come on. It's behind me.
Oh, bye. The question I'd like to ask is it's on the thing of change again. It's the thing of when you change as a person and get a faith and become a Christian, and then you see within your own community what needs doing.
Yes.
And then you've got a church within that community that basically isn't willing to change. Using your term of the butterfly,
yes.
How do you get that church to jump into the soup?
Yeah. How do you get your church to jump into the soup? Well, I think there's a great strength in having nothing left to lose. I think when you've got nothing left to lose, you're in the best place as far as church is concerned. The trouble is, we still think we've got stuff to lose. And that's tripping us up. We've got nothing left to lose, so we need to go for it. We need to have a go at being different. And that permission giving and encouragement, it's hard, hard work, isn't it? Come on, come on. But I think we've nothing left to lose in the churches. We need to be released. But then there's a moment of caution that I have here. And the image that I want to use is like a jack-in-a-box. Because, you know where a jack-in-a-box is? You've got a box and you've got a little puppet in it on a spring, and if you take the lid off, the puppet goes ba-doing. Yeah? So transformation is the ba-doing. You know, when the jack comes out the box. Whoosh. And the danger is that when the jack comes out the box with all that energy, it flies off somewhere because it's not attached to the box. It just, you know, the energy's dissipated. And I think we still need communities that are going to hold that sense of home, if you like, whatever the language is you want, that sense of being rooted and earthed. But we need to enable the energy to come out the box. I don't advocate no box, because the danger with no box is you lose that point of connection. And I know at somewhere else, and also in Bradford, that point of connection is very important, because we have to stay accountable, and we have to know when we're going nuts, actually. Sometimes a bit borderline, but we have to remain accountable. And that's the tension, isn't it? You know, but be able to take the lid off and say, look, we've got nothing left to lose. Let's just have a go at something. Also, I think have a go at something simple. Don't write a business plan, a strategy statement, a feasibility study. Don't. I've just done that. It's horrible. And it's a waste of time. And don't tell the grants committee. Don't do that. Have a go at something small. I mean, when we started the Bread Church, we got one. We went to Poundland and bought some plastic bowls, 99p. Tesco's and bought a bag of flour. We made 3 loaves each, because that's what it said on the back of the flour, and some yeast and some salt and honey out of somebody's cupboard, you know. Start somewhere small. Start with something. Do something. Anything. Do something. Some small thing. And do that and see what happens, and reflect on that and say, oh, that was interesting, you know, I didn't expect that to happen. First time we made bread, we had so much bread it was flowing out the oven, you know, because we didn't have a big enough oven, actually, but no. but that's so, yeah, okay, so we need to do that differently. I think start somewhere and start small, and start by listening to, what have I heard, what have I noticed, why is that like that, you know. Those kids, something, anything, start somewhere. Don't think about the youth of the neighbourhood, you know. Think about, oh, I'm at the bus stop with this guy, I've seen him, you know, so how you doing? Seen you. It's that, it's human, it's and within that is the stuff of God. Don't know whether that answers the question, but that would be my counsel.
Hi, I became a Christian not that long ago. And I can understand the transformation I've gone through, from living fully in the world to being one side or the other, getting drunk one weekend, being in church the following weekend, through to, you know, 2 beers is enough for me now, and I'm getting giddy. which is a bit embarrassing with my mates. But God's given me an evangelical missional heart.
Yes, yes.
And I think from the churches, I've been through Anglican, Methodist, yeah. I'm in an AOG church now.
Yes.
What God keeps speaking to me is that every day mission is in front of me.
Yes.
In my workplace, my colleagues, yes. My friends, yes. My family. Yes. And sometimes the churches I've been in, there seems to be a lot of spending time setting up ways to reach people, which means normally organising things, funding them, and then getting people there,
yeah.
Then building a relationship,
yes.
To then witness to,
yes.
Them.
It's about how we are in, yeah. Tesco's, isn't it? It's in the bus queue. It's how we, what we embody, that's what people notice. I'm sure, I don't know your story about coming to faith, but mine is, I actually saw people that I wanted to be like. It wasn't anything that anybody preached at me or taught me in Sunday school. Sunday school was just drawing those houses with flat roofs and steps up the side. But I'm quite good at that, actually. And on a good day, you can make a hole in the roof and lower the lame man in. But it's about, actually, they've got something I want that. They're getting wound up, but then they're not losing their rags. So what's that about? You know, they're taking trouble with that kid. So what's that about? I want to be like that. That's the sort of person I want to be. What have they got? That it's that stuff, actually, isn't it? That, and we do that all the time. We do it here. We do it at work. It's that. I remember at somewhere else I'd spent the whole day making bread, and I was having this ego trip about, you know, I'm really good, I've been alongside the homeless all day, and, you know, I'm really tired now, it was all for Jesus. And I'm on the train to go home, Merseyrail, just like walking down Bold Street and getting the train to go home, and this guy, I know him, he's a rogue, and he's just sitting there, and he's had both legs amputated because of his drugs abuse, and he wanted money. He's, "Hi, Bob, you got some..." I was, go away! You know, but it's that one, isn't it? It's that one. That's the extra mile and the coat, that's the one. And it's in those small things. Like, I'm a great believer in that we change the world through small things.
Yeah. One thing I'd just like to say to some of the people is there's a charity called CVM, which is Christian Vision for Men, which I've spoken to, seen, and we've set up a men's ministry in our church. And they're reaching men by doing men's things. Because I love church, but now, before church was very feminine for me, my wife was a Christian, and I was like, well, that's just an emotional crux. But they're reaching men by going out and doing things and getting alongside men. They're going go-karting, shooting, yeah, setting fire to things. You've got...
excuse me, you've got an old church, there's an arsonist here.
But they're doing what you said. They're reaching to their community by doing what the community does and wants to do, not by what they think... Yeah.
The interesting thing about the bread making is that we agonised over it a lot, about it being a woman's thing. It's cooking, you know. But actually, we consistently, and I think it's still true, have more men than women. You know, it's great. Right. It's wham it.
Well, really out of time, but there's just two more quick questions, I think.
I'm short, but I reached the mic anyway. I participated in a discussion circle where it was called a safe place to share, and as a consequence, it wasn't a safe place to listen, because people would come out with whatever. And it was oftentimes some of the deepest and darkest and really difficult parts of their week. But I'm curious about the difficulties of listening and the need for real community-oriented action to kind of ground that listening in something, because as much as I was gathering with these people kind of occasionally in the weeks, there was nothing actually to create a community space apart from this circle, because it was just listening. It wasn't anything that was going beyond into any sort of action beyond that listening. I understand listening is an action, but that the need for action and the need to connect it to something real in people's lives. I was wondering if you could comment.
Yeah, I mean, I would want to say listening is not action. I mean, listening is active. It is an active thing, isn't it? It's actually pretty hard work. It's much, much harder to listen than to do stuff. We I don't know, I'm a Methodist, so we're very good at doing things. You know, we can make tea and stuff like that, and we can, you know, but we're not very good at being quiet and giving people time and space. I speak for myself. I got stuck in the Jesus Arms last night trying to get 3 Methodist pints of beer, and there was just the singing. I couldn't get out. It was awful. It's like, shut up. But, you know, listening, actually being quiet and listening is actually hard work, and it's also long term, so we don't know. But I also want, you know, the moment when that moves into action. You feel that moment when it moves into something else, when it provokes you. I think so. But I don't think there's a shortcut to it. I think that has to be the starting point. For my money.
Last question. It's actually more of a comment than a question. It's some of the transformation also comes from seeing your church community in a different way and enabling things. All too often we say, we can't change because the old people won't like it. Now, we've started some listening at our church, and two of the most amazing things that have come out is one of our lovely old ladies actually let everybody know that her favourite band is Meatloaf. And there's everybody going, oh, no, can't have that sort of music because the old people won't like it. You know, and there's Peggy saying, well, actually, I like Meatloaf. And the other was, it sort of picks up a bit from the bloke who was talking about men's ministry. Allow people to be who they are, whether they're lesbian, gay, straight, bisexual, transgendered, black, white, whatever. Because if you actually listen to who people are, you will find amazing strengths. And we have in our congregation one of the first female aeronautical engineers. Now, if you start listening to people's stories, you get a totally different perception of who they are, and that some of them have been groundbreaking. They're up for being groundbreaking again.
Just had a special request just for one final question.
I wondered if you could just say a little bit about how your work and being with this deep listening has transformed yourself, because I think that you said about how when we listen we're triggered. It seems to me that the church needs a lot of help in our own kind of personal work, because so many people find that they are not safe in church because their story has triggered the person and they're the ones that get into trouble.
Yes. So you're asking how I've been changed by this journey. I personally... two things, I think. One is I don't want to rescue the church anymore. I've given up on Sir Galahad stuff because God's of the world, and we can trust God in that. Actually, God has not abandoned this project. So I think that's a great relief. Phew, I haven't got to rescue this. You know, my calling is to be alive as a human being in the presence of God and through the transformative power of Jesus. That's quite enough. And the other is this kind of, and this is a curious sort of sense really, is this ability, this kind of opening up within me of a sort of inner safe space that is kind of, it's a bit of a surprise, but kind of I feel bigger inside, not just the bread. that sense of I can carry a little place of safety with me to listen for long enough sometimes to enable this thing to happen. And it's quite intentional about trying not to be so busy that I can't, you know, people will say, that's ridiculous, Barbie, you are very busy, but... You know, that in an intentional thing about saying, actually, I've got a bit of safe space. I can carry that. If you tell me something, it'll be held in this place. It's not going to damage me. I will honour it, and I can hold it. And I think part of my spiritual journey to try and go deeper. I want to renounce, in some ways, the image of we're on this great pilgrimage and we're destined to some great sort of place eventually, but that actually our journey is in and deepens our hearts and our souls, and that's the intentional process, and that's just where I am with it at the moment.
Right, well, we've definitely run out of time, so thank you very much, Barbara Dawson.